In order for you to be the only one offering your products or services under that brand, you need to own that brand. In fact, what I always say is that without a trademark, not only do you not own your brand, you actually don't even have a brand, because it only becomes a brand when you can legally stop others from selling their products and services under your brand.
Andrei Minkov is the founder and CEO of Trademark Factory, the only firm in the world that offers trademark registration services with a guaranteed result for a guaranteed budget. He believes people who have created something deserve to not have it stolen from them. Hardworking entrepreneurs shouldn't be taken advantage of. That's why he founded Trademark Factory. That's why he's passionate about sharing his experience with growth-minded entrepreneurs who want to build amazing brands. And when he's not helping secure trademarks, Andrei enjoys living in Dubai with his wife and three kids. He's also dreamed up, designed, engineered, and had made for himself a one-of-a-kind drum desk. Now he can type emails and do double bass paradiddles at the same time. On a personal note, I have known Andrei for several years. We go way, way back. Originally, we met at a business conference training kind of thing. And when I trademarked the original version of this podcast, when I trademarked The Empowered Life, I went to Andrei, and as a client, I will tell you, I was so supported, so taken care of. I knew I was in good hands and trusted him every step of the process. It was so simple. It was easy to go through, and I highly recommend him. Well, I highly recommend Trademark Factory because it's bigger than just him, but I highly recommend working with Trademark Factory for all of your trademarking needs. And they are the only ones that I refer to whenever anyone asks me, Terry, do you know a good trademark lawyer? I'm like, I know the trademark lawyer, Andrei Minkov, Trademark Factory. That is who you have to go to. There's nothing like it. And if you're going to pay money and invest in your trademark, which, as you will hear in this episode, you should be doing, when you do that, you want to know that you're in good hands. And with Andrei and with Trademark Factory, you are in good hands. All right, on with the show. You're listening to Success in Mind, the show for high-performing leaders, changemakers, and entrepreneurs ready to take your life and business to the next level. If you're ready for whole life success, keep listening. Hey, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, likewise. I'm excited to have you here. So let's jump into the big question of what should we be trademarking when it comes to our businesses?
All right, let's jump right into that.
Right in.
And that's a great question for entrepreneurs who aren't certain, because really there are two assumptions that you want to start with, right? So the first assumption that you want to start with is that, hey, I have an unlimited budget. And second assumption is that every single brand element you can think of for your business is trademarkable. That's where you start, because your goal at the early stage is to come up with a list of everything that you got, and then you sort it in the order of importance to you, right? So I'm going to get to that in a second. But okay, you want to do it, like, you probably want to have a much longer list of brand elements that you got that you actually want to go and trademark, from both the legal reasons and the budgetary reasons. But that's your start. Okay. So there are typically five big areas of your brand elements that you will start with. One is the name of the company, or your personal name if you are an individual, like a celebrity or a coach or a consultant, something like that. Well, I don't know. Tony Robbins, kind of, right? Because that's the name of the business. That's the first place you look at. The second place you look at is if you sell physical products, it will be the name of each of your products, right? So again, if we think about going back to the first step, name of the company, Apple, right? Name of products will be your iPad, your iPhone, your AirPods, whatever, right?
Yeah.
The third one is name of your services. If you got different services and they each have a name, or if you, again, if you're a coach, if you have programs that people can buy, courses or things like that, something that's not a physical product that has a name, again, that will be your third one, iTunes. The fourth category would be your logos, if you have any. And depending on the type of your business, the importance of the logo is going to vary. For some businesses, logo is tremendously important. For some, it's not at all. One of the things that I was truly amazed by is when I had my first kid, one of the first things she was able to distinguish and actually point out and say were the names of the stores. Like, we would drive somewhere, and like, oh, that's IKEA, that's McDonald's, that's this, that's that. But the way she could do that is because she could see the logo. So if your business is brick and mortar business that you want people to see from the highway, you know, logo is important. If you are, I don't know, PayPal or something like that, that needs that seal of authenticity almost, right? You need a logo. If you're Nike, that you buy a 50-cent shirt, you place your swoosh on a white shirt and you sell it for $30, you need a logo, a trademark, right?
Yeah.
If you're an accountant in, I don't know, somewhere, like a small city somewhere, and you've got a team of you and your assistant, probably nobody cares about your logo, right? It's the it's not as important for you to trademark. If you are a network, like I'm blanking out. What's the H&R Block, right?
The green
circle.
Square.
Right?
Yeah.
That's important because, again, that's what people recognize. So you ask yourself a question, is the logo important? And finally, the last one would be your tagline. So if you, in your marketing, have figured out a phrase that makes it easier for people to remember you, to make it more likely for them to buy from you, you got something that you want to own, that'll be your tagline. So that's the five, right? Name of the company, names of products, name of services, logos, and tagline.
Okay.
And that's the list. You put together a list, right? Then you sort that list based on which of these would I hate the most to lose. Those go to the very top. And at the very bottom, I'll be like, meh, like, really, who gives a damn? Those will be at the bottom, right?
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, I don't have an unlimited budget. You figure out, okay, really, this is how much money I am willing to spend on this. And you figure out that out of your 27 brand elements, you can only do 3 or 4 or 5 or 7 or whatever, right? And then you're like, okay, that's the ones I should focus on. But then the other consideration that's also very important is that trademarks are done on a per country basis.
Right.
There's no such thing as a global trademark. You do trademarks in one country, then you do trademarks in the other country, in the third, fourth, and so on. And so if you only have, I don't know, for example, budget for 7 trademarks, then what you need to figure out is, okay, do I want 7 in one country, or do I want 3 in 1, 2 in 2? That's kind of another consideration, which is also very important depending on your business. From there, what we always recommend is you start with your home country.
Right.
That's the beginning of the conversation. And then the second layer would be trademarking your brand in countries that make you the most amount of money. So if you've got a bunch of customers, like, I don't know, if you're a Canadian business, but most of your sales come from the U.S., you start with Canada, but then you also do U.S.
Right.
Because that's where your market is. You want to protect your monopoly on the brand in your most important markets. Right. The third layer would be countries where you spend a lot of money. So if you have an office, or if you target your ad, I don't know, you have your Facebook ads and you're targeting Australia and you're spending, I don't know, $5,000 a year on Australia, it probably means that you feel that Australia is important to you. If you got an office, like I said, if you got headquarters, if you got a physical location, so that would be a third. And lastly, if you make your physical products overseas, you want to get a trademark there, even if you are not planning to sell a single item there. Because if you don't, and someone else trademarks it there, they can prevent you from exporting your own stuff out of that country to where you intend to sell. We actually had a situation with one e-bike company, right? So they're a U.S. company. They decided to, they found a factory in China to make their e-bikes. They paid them a lot of money. They told them exactly what to do. They sent them the specs. And the factory made them a big container worth of those e-bikes. And then turned out that someone else trademarked that name in China. And just as that factory was about to put that container on a ship, they got a court order basically saying that they couldn't ship them out of China because that trademark was owned by those other guys.
Wow.
Imagine you're a business owner sitting somewhere in Texas waiting for that shipment. And then they tell you, whoops, we can't send it to you. Like you already spent the money, you paid them, you paid for the ship, you're sitting there waiting, what are you going to do? Right. So if that's you, you want to protect yourself from that part of it.
Yeah.
Right? So so that's kind of the second big consideration. And remember the assumption I gave you at the beginning, right? That everything is trademarkable. That's a fun one, but also not true. There's a lot of things that are not trademarkable, right? You could come up with something that's generic, something that's not really a trademark, right? If you are, I don't know why I'm thinking so much of accounting today, but like, let's say you're an accountant, right? And you're like, oh, hey, let me trademark the word accounting, right? That would be my brand, accounting. Or, I don't know, Dallas accounting or whatever, right? That would be denied because it doesn't really give you the ability to help your customers to tell your products or services apart from everyone else's, which is the function of a trademark, right?
Okay.
So the trademarks office is vigilant about not giving, because trademarks are all about a monopoly, right?
Right.
The government gives you a legal monopoly to stop everyone else from selling their products and services under a brand similar to yours. And they're not going to do that if what you're trying to bite is more than you should. So if it's generic, if it's too broad, if it's not something that functions as a trademark, they'll say no. The other thing is, the other situation when they'll say no is if you're trying to trademark something that's too close to someone else's brand.
Right.
Right. And I like domain names where you look at identical matches. And if you try the domain name and it's taken, you're like, okay, let me add a one at the end. Or, you know, let me add a dash in the middle and I'm going to have it. Or, you know, add my in the beginning, I'm going to have it. That works with domain names. It does not work with trademarks. So if you were to like to trademark Nike One for sneakers, good luck with that. Or micro-soft for software, you know, same thing. It's not going to fly because they look at similar brands. So that's either the considerations. Equipped with these considerations, really, that's how you do it. You put together a list of something from most important to least important, and you basically make that list longer by adding them in different countries. So I have the name of the company in US, the name of the company in Canada, the name of the company in Mexico, the name of the company, you know, wherever else. Oh, I have the name of a product in US, the name of a product. And so you have the long list, you sort it out, and then you say, okay, if all of it was trademarkable, I would like to go with these 5, 7, 10 trademarks. And then you get a proper trademark search just to confirm that what you came up with can be trademarked.
Okay.
And something that's not trademarkable, you go back to the drawing board and you say to yourself, you know what? This would have been a great brand, but it's really not a brand because I can't own it. There's no value to the brand you cannot own. And you might even be stepping in someone else's shoes, you know, and they can sue you. Like that's the last thing you want as an entrepreneur who is trying to get everything done right. You don't want to add, you know, $100,000 expense to your business by just, you know, defending against a lawsuit. Because when you're starting out, the value of your brand is very low. Nobody knows it, right? And the only value is potential value. And so if you realize you can't have it, might as well go back and come up with something different, but something that you can own. That's kind of the long answer to your short question.
No, that's excellent. That's great. So when we're looking, or actually, let me ask you this next. Why would we trademark something? And that might seem like a really obvious question, but why would we trademark, and what kind of protection does that give the business owner?
Yeah, that's a great question. See, I just came back from LA, and I'm still trying to deal with this cold that I got there. And so I'm sorry. The why is actually the number one question, obviously, you should ask yourself, is that the brand, first you work for the brand, then the brand starts working for you.
Right.
And there are several reasons why it does that. The first one is that it actually makes it easier for you to sell your stuff. Because if you talk to any sales trainer, right, anyone who is in sales, they'll tell you that in order to sell something, you need to establish that the guy on the other end of the line likes and trusts you.
Right.
Right. And if you're a nobody, if you've got something that nobody knows what it is, nobody's heard of you, it's much harder for you to compete with someone who has established that brand. You know, we can talk, you know, you can be an Apple fan or you can hate Apple, but you know Apple.
Yeah.
Right. And there is a reason why they can charge a premium over their phones, right? If you are, you know, another good example is Dropbox, right? Mm-hmm. If you need to send your file, something that's sensitive, you don't want to use a platform you've never heard of. You probably wouldn't send your sensitive files through some, you know, I don't know, Chinese platform nobody's ever heard of. Or you probably go with someone, something you have heard of, someone you trust. And in order for you to be the only one offering your products or services under that brand, you need to own that brand. In fact, what I always say is without a trademark, not only do you not own your brand, you actually don't even have a brand. Because it only becomes a brand when you can legally stop others from selling their products and services under your brand. And the only way to get that done is by registering a trademark. Nothing else works. You know, being in business for 7 years doesn't cut it. Registering a domain name doesn't do it. Registering a company or an LLC doesn't get you there. Registering a YouTube profile or Facebook, it doesn't work.
Right.
And some people will think, well, you know, I've heard that there's this thing called common law trademark. That by virtue of you having been in business under a certain name, you can claim that you've established what's called a common law trademark, right, without registration. That is true. But the problem with that is that you can only establish that you have a common law trademark in a court case, in trial, every time.
Okay.
Right? That you can ask the judge to recognize that, hey, we've established enough of a reputation in a big enough of a territory so that the defendants must be found to have infringed on our rights. And it's just too freaking expensive. It's too long. It's too uncertain. It's too expensive. So that's the reason the trademarking process was invented, that you can go file a small piece of paper, send it to the government, give them a little bit of money. And in some time, which now takes about a year and a half in US and about 3-4 years in Canada, they'll give you a piece of paper that you'll say, this is mine, right? And compare that to $100,000 you give to lawyers to convince a judge that, you know, you've been in business for 7 years, you've made this many sales, you have to find experts, you have to find numbers, you have to do all that. And you have to do that every single time.
Wow.
Compared to a registered trademark that you're like, this is mine, right? And when you send a demand letter, when you send a demand letter to someone who you think infringes on your brand, the first thing they'll do when they read your letter and see how upset you are that they are borrowing your fame on and your brand, the first thing they'll do, you know, after they've shown the letter to their lawyer, would be to find out, hey, do they actually own a trademark? And if the answer to that is yes, if it's a registered trademark, then the lawyer is probably going to say, you need to figure out a way to get out of this as quickly and as painlessly as you can, because they're going to win.
Yeah.
And they are likely to go after you because it's easy. Like, all they have to do is show this piece of paper to the judge.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a registered trademark, the lawyer will probably say, hey, they didn't bother with filing a trademark. They didn't spend any money on doing something that's simple. How likely is it that they're now going to spend a lot of money going after you for this?
Right.
You might want to sit this one out and wait for them to sue you. So most demand letters that are based on a registered trademark end up in some sort of a settlement. Most letters that are based on a trademark that has not been registered get ignored. That's another big reason why. And finally, is the cost of your team, cost of your marketing.
Yeah.
If you're an established company, you're going to have a lineup of people who want to work for you.
Yeah.
And they probably want to work for less compared to if you are a no name. Like, think about all those developers who want to take a stab at working at Google.
Right.
They are so qualified, they'll probably be paid double had they been working with some small startup.
Mm-hmm.
But they want that line in their resume, so when they go to work for that startup, they can get paid more.
Yeah.
Right. And what allows Google to do that is precisely their brand, because everyone recognizes, everyone knows what it is. Same with the cost of, Facebook ads, right?
Mm-hmm.
The more established your brand is, the less worried the platform is that you're some sort of a scam. And so with unknown brands, with brands who have just started out, you as an advertiser are paying a premium because you want to kind of de-risk the situation for Facebook. They're like, you know what? We don't know who they are. They look sort of legit. Let's, you know, give them this amount as a cost per click.
Right.
If you're a big name that everyone recognizes and they know they're not going away, you know that they're still going to be there if they sell something that, you know, is defective, your cost per click is going to be much lower. So there's a lot of good reasons to do that many people don't recognize. A lot of people are like, well, trademarking is just, you know, that piece of paper or all that I can frame and put on my wall. And it's kind of an ego thing that I can deal with after I've made all the billions and, you know, no, it's actually something without which you will never get to that point of, you know, getting to the grown up, you know, area of where, where you are treated as a serious business.
Oh yeah. That's, yeah, that I know that gives me a lot to think about because I hadn't considered a lot of that before of, that's really valuable. What made you decide to specialize in trademarking?
So I was in the intellectual property area for close to 30 years now. It all started with my dad, who was a famous composer in Russia.
Oh, wow.
And I was still going to my first law school back in the day. You know, I lived in Russia and I didn't know exactly what I'd do with that degree, but one day my dad, I came home from school and my dad was furious. And I'm, what's going on? He said, I caught a radio station that took a song that I wrote, a song for a children's movie, actually a song that I used to sing with him on stage when I was like 8 years old. And they took it and they turned that into an ad for some song without his permission.
Oh, wow.
That was 1996. That was many, many years ago. And so he said, I called the radio station and I told them that they couldn't just take my music and use it as they pleased. And they basically told him to sit down, shut up, and be grateful that they're making him even more famous as a composer. And if you knew my dad, you'd know right away that was a wrong thing to say to him.
Right.
So he got absolutely mad around this. And, you know, he told him, okay, I'll see you in court. He slammed down the phone. And then he realized that Russia had just transitioned from the Soviet copyright laws that basically didn't exist to more or less free market laws that nobody knew. And so he came to, because there were really no precedents. There was no one experienced in this kind of stuff. So he asked me if I could help him while still being a law student. And in Russia, you actually can. You don't need a degree to represent clients in anything other like than criminal, right? You have to, to be an attorney for criminal, but for civil litigation, like anyone can do it.
Wow.
And so I said, well, you realize I don't know any of this. He said, yeah, I do. I'm like, okay, great. And then because I've always admired him, I've always, you know, sought to get his approval and things like that. So I said, okay, let's give it a shot. And long story short, I had to take this case all the way up to second highest court in the nation because Russia at that time wasn't exactly the least corrupt legal system, so to say. And so we won. And in the process, I got so passionate about helping people protect that which only exists because they created it that I'm like, maybe there's a reason that I started going to law school because before I didn't see myself as a lawyer, right? To me, law is boring. but this combination of creativity with law was something that I found some passion in. And so in 07, I had enough of Russia. Back in 07, Russia still had the exact same president it has today. And I wasn't too happy with the direction it was going. And so I said to myself, I want to go somewhere else. I went to Canada. I moved to Canada. I had to go to my second law school. Finished my law school, top of my class. And still got a grand total of zero offers from Canadian law firms, which was probably the most frustrating time of my life. Because you're like, hey, what just happened? I used to be, you know, top five attorney in Russia working for all the big firms. Because I used to work with the Baker & McKenzie, which is the biggest international law firm in the world, doing work for Apple, Microsoft, DreamWorks, J.K. Rowling. Like all those big names you can think of, I've probably done something with them. And here I come to Canada and nobody wants me. Okay, what now? And that's when I discovered Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Yeah.
right? And I'm like, you know what? I can probably come up with something creative around that. And I've started talking to a bunch of people trying to figure out what needs are there in the market. And I wanted to go back to doing what I was passionate about and realize that copyright in Canada wasn't exactly something that, you know, I could make a career out of. But trademarks, something I could. And it's very close. And it's very scalable. And there's huge number of trademarks being written. Like there's 70,000 trademarks filed in Canada every year. 700,000 trademarks filed in the U.S. every year.
Wow.
So if you do the math, it's like, what, 2,000 trademarks a day. Right.
Yeah.
So while someone is listening to this interview, you know, someone may be trademarking your brand right now.
Ooh.
So, you know, no, I mean, it is kind of scary if you think about it. Because,
yeah, it is.
Because, like I mentioned, trademarks are not just about the identical stuff, right? It's not that someone targets you specifically to steal your trademark from you. Someone can independently come up with something similar. And if they file that trademark first, you're done.
Right.
So, and when I combine that, that was another book that I read, actually another two books that gave me the idea for Trademark Factory, which is a firm that offers trademark registration services the way that nobody else does.
Yeah.
The two other books were Michael Gerber's E-Myth,
right,
of course, and we actually are doing a bunch of trademarks for Michael. And the other book was John Warrilow's Build to Sell.
Oh, nice.
About how you productize a service. And that's how I came up with this idea of, why don't we, instead of, you know, being just yet another law firm that bullshits its clients with, you know, how much time it spends on the file and charges by the hour, why don't we treat entrepreneurs the way they deserve to be treated and sell them a service as a result? Because no entrepreneur really cares about how long the process takes. No entrepreneur really cares about how many hours some paralegal, some clerk in some firm spent on, you know, filing the application, responding to some office. All they care about is, hey, did I get a trademark or did I not get a trademark?
Yeah.
Right? It's a binary thing for them. And so I said to myself, can we do something like that? How can we do something like that? And how can we add a guarantee on top of that? So that, and again, that goes back to having a brand, right? I was in a new country.
Right.
Nobody knew me. Nobody knew who I was, this crazy Russian guy who's, you know, trying to offer our services in trademark. How do I compete with all the law firms? Right.
Yeah.
And my answer to that was, I got to give them something that nobody else does. And that was a flat fee trademark registration service from start to finish with a 100% money back guarantee. Basically, it's an unbeatable offer if you care about protecting your brand. And that's what kept us afloat, right? This is my very first business. I have made more mistakes in it than I wish to acknowledge. And really, the only thing that kept us afloat all these years is the offer. Because, you know, I've wasted so much money on ads that didn't work, on loaded team that really I didn't need, on this and this and this and this. Had it been any other offer, I'd probably be doing something else today.
Wow.
But because, you know, there's value in what we offer that basically sells itself, you know, I always resurrect the company in different versions, because again, there's a bunch of entrepreneurs out there or wannapreneurs who see an offer on Google Ads. Hey, you know, we're going to trademark your brand in 5 minutes for $69. I'm like, great. I want that. Right. And they actually believe that that's what they're going to get. But there will be people like that, you know, and obviously they're not our target audience, but there are entrepreneurs who are like, this thing is actually important to me. And I'm smart enough to know that I'm not getting quality legal services with some service that's, you know, shows Google that we're going to trademark your brand in 5 minutes for $69.
Yeah.
And they don't want to deal with lawyers. They don't want the uncertainty of how much the whole thing is going to cost. And they become our best clients.
That's amazing. That's amazing. You mentioned copyright and trademarking. What's the difference between the two? Because I know that's something I'm not clear of. And I'm sure a lot of people like me don't know what the difference is.
Yeah. So intellectual property is just an umbrella term, right? That actually doesn't mean anything unless you provide some context. It's a collection of different types of IP. So copyright, let me go back to how I explain it in my book, The Ultimate Insider's Guide to Intellectual Property. So what I came up with is what I call magic words, one magic word for each type of IP that makes it easier for you to remember and understand. So for copyright, the magic word is how. Copyright is all about content, but not from the perspective of what you write or what you say in your video, but how you do it.
Okay.
The actual words that you choose, the actual videos that you, the actual music that you write, right? So copyright protects your music, your videos, your images, your photographs, your software, your texts, your copy. But again, not from the perspective of what you say, but how you do it. So I wrote a book.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And it doesn't mean that, Terry, you couldn't write a book on intellectual property that teaches people about the same thing, because, you know, there's only so many ways you can teach people about IP, right? But if you copy two pages from my book, that's copyright infringement. You deciding to write a book on copyright isn't, right? You deciding to shoot a movie about a casino heist is not copyright infringement on Ocean's 11.
Okay.
But you borrowing parts of that script is. So that's why the magic word is how. Is how you express those ideas, right? Which words, which images. Trademarks, the magic word is which. Because trademarks are designed to give consumers the ability to tell your products apart from everyone else's. So the picture that I want you to imagine is you go to the grocery store and you walk up to a shelf with ketchup, right? There's a bunch of ketchup. It's ketchup, but they'll have different labels on them.
Yeah.
That's what a trademark does. That's how you know this Heinz ketchup. This is not or toothpaste.
Yeah.
Right? Which actually goes back to the value of trademarks. How often do you change the brand of your toothpaste?
Not often.
Most people do it
rarely.
Never.
Yeah.
Like, they pick something when they're young and they stick to it for the rest of their freaking life. And not necessarily because that toothpaste is better than all the other toothpastes. It's brand loyalty, really all it is. Because nobody wants to spend any time thinking, do I go with that or do I go with this? This works. I'm just going to keep buying this.
Yeah.
Right. And that is why the magic word is which, right? You see a bunch of options. You pick the one that speaks to you. You take it off the shelf, you buy it.
Yeah.
Right? Same with trademarking services, right? There's a lot of trademarking companies out there. You know, you pick the one. You pick the one because you remember it by the name, or, you know, Koji services or phones or whatever. Which next area is patents. And for that, the magic word is what? Because patents are as close as you're going to get to protecting the underlying idea. It's not exactly what patents protect, but it's as close as you're going to get to that. Patents protect inventions, which are novel, unique, not obvious inventions that someone came up with that can't be reproduced en masse, right? And you can protect methods, you can protect the actual products. Like, I don't want to go into the details, but if you came up with a novel product, something that nobody's offered before, you may want to consider getting it patented. Patents are very expensive. They take even longer than trademarks, about 5-6 years to get one.
Wow.
They are, unlike trademarks, by the way, trademarks is the only type of IP that can last forever.
Oh.
Because you can renew it and renew it. So Coca-Cola has been renewing their trademarks since 1992.
Wow.
And which, incidentally, they filed when they were selling 9 drinks a day, like all the lemonade stand with a dream, right? They knew that if they wanted to build a business around that, they needed to own the brand of that drink.
Mm-hmm.
So they trademarked it. Right. Patents are much shorter. They're 20 years from the filing date. And that's it. You can't extend them. You can't renew them. You're done. So effectively, you get about 14, 15 years of protection.
Okay.
But that allows you to stop anyone from selling a product similar to yours, regardless of what they call it. Right. So with drugs, right? They call them generics. Here's what happens. So a pharma company comes up with a new drug, a new formula, and they give it a name. And they get both the patent and the trademark. While the patent is still alive, they can stop anyone else from selling a drug with the same formula. And they sell it under their brand. Then when the patent expires, because the way patents work, when you file for a patent, you have to disclose the invention. So you have to disclose the formula in their case, right?
Okay.
So anyone who reads the patent can make that same drug. And so after that 20 years is done, anyone else, all those other factories, can make the same drug, but they can't give it the same name.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because those pharma companies still own the trademark.
Right.
Right. So they give it a different name, whatever. Viagra is a perfect example, right?
Yeah.
They established the need in the market. They, established the brand. Now we got the real one and you got generics, right? It's exact same pill, but still some people choose one or the other based on whether they want to go cheap or they want to go authentic, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what for trademarks, for patents. The next one is design patents, or they're called industrial designs in Canada.
Okay.
And the magic word for those is wow. It's something that protects looks. If you came up with a special shape for your physical product, or a pattern and how you dress it up, or color or something like that, something that only has value because of the looks, that can be protected with a design patent. The great example for that is, you know how they sell lemon juice in those plasticky thingies that look like a lemon?
Yeah.
That's what a design patent is, because you can sell lemon juice in any container, right? It doesn't have to look like lemon. It can be just a regular bottle like everyone used to do it before.
Yeah.
And so someone said, why don't we, do it with a squeezy lemony thingy?
Yeah.
Right. And they protected that. So that's the wow.
That's cool.
The next one is trade secrets or know-how.
Okay.
For that, the magic word is hush. Because you only get some protection as long as the information remains secret.
Right.
As soon as someone figures it out on their own, or as soon as someone you've shared it with breaches your confidentiality agreement, your NDA, right? If they, if let's say you're my investor, right?
Yeah.
Or potential investor, and you're like, hey, I'm considering investing, but, I need you to tell me more about your business. I'm like, great. You signed this NDA and I'm going to tell you everything. So you sign the NDA, I tell you everything. If you then breach that NDA and post stuff about, my numbers, my client lists, my unique ways of doing things, and you just post it as a YouTube video, right? And that YouTube video has 4 million views. All I can do is I can sue you for breaching that contract that I had with you.
Right.
And if you have no money, there's nothing really I can do. I can't sue YouTube. I can't sue the 4 million people who watched that video. I can't sue the people who listened to that video, watched that video, and decided to act on what they've learned and decided to start a competing business based on what they found out, right? Yeah. All I can do is sue the guy who signed the stupid NDA. And so, like I said, another good example is Coca-Cola's recipe, right? They put up a whole show about this with a vault and different people, you know, owning different parts of that recipe. Yeah, it looks cool. It looks very mysterious. It sort of adds value to what they do. So it is protected by a trade secret that they protect like that. But if I'm some sort of a chemical genius and I figure out a way to deconstruct the recipe, and I figure it out exactly, it's, you know, this, and I say, this is what I think it is, and I post it on the web, they can do anything to me because I'm not in breach of any NDA. I didn't sign an NDA. And if my formula works to give exactly what they do, they own nothing.
Right.
Because it's no longer a secret. Like, you can't protect something that came public knowledge. And so that's your trade secret. And the last one, something that most people forget about, is contracts, license agreements, assignment agreements. Because, and the magic word for those is whatever. Because contracts can be much, much stronger than anything else, than the default provision of the law. Because you signing one piece of paper saying that, hey, I give you the right to use my stuff the way you want to, and you don't need to pay me, or, you know, you need to pay me a dollar for it. That's it. Now they own your, what used to be your IP. You don't. And so in my earlier career as a lawyer, when I was mostly dealing with copyrights, I've met a ton of authors who are like, hey, can we go after these people because they're doing something wrong with the book I wrote or the script I wrote for the movie? I don't like what they're doing with it. And I say, okay, great. Did you sign anything? Yeah, you know, I signed something, but I'm the author, right? I wrote it. And I say, yeah, it's great that you wrote it, but I need to see what you signed.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, what difference does it make? The law says that the person who writes the literary work owns the works. And yes, until that person signs a piece of paper that says that someone else can do whatever they want with it. And so reluctantly, they would bring me the contract. I'd read the contract and they're like, why the hell did you sign this?
Yeah.
And like, can we do something about it? I'm like, not really.
Yeah.
And so people tend to use going through agreements like a speed reading exercise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, it looks all right. And, you know, they sign a 20-page agreement without really reading it. And that can be really, really, really dangerous. So anything that has any parts that might affect the ownership of your IP or someone else's ability to use your IP has to be read very, very carefully. I'm not saying that you should never sell your IP or license your IP or franchise your IP. There's nothing wrong with that, but you need to understand what you're giving up, how you can control the use of what they're going to do with your stuff. You know, can you limit it, or can you sell it to other people in the future?
Right.
Is there a term? Is there this or that? So you have to be very clear on the terms. And if you're not, never sign something that you don't understand. That can really come back and bite you.
That's great advice. And this might be a little bit of a silly question, but this is one I asked my Instagram followers, what questions do you have about trademarking? And one that came up a few times was, what's the difference between the TM symbol and the R in the circle symbol? What do they mean?
That's not a silly question. That's a very real thing for people to consider. So R in a circle, let's start there, is you telling the world, hey, I own a registered trademark.
Okay.
I filed a trademark. It went through the process. The government said, hey, here's your trademark registration certificate.
Mm-hmm.
That trademark registration certificate, is still current. You renewed it, right?
Yeah.
And it's in the same country where you're marketing the product or the service.
Okay.
So, for example, if you're a Coca-Cola, as long as you keep renewing your trademark every 10 years, so their trademark is in the U.S., as long as you continue selling your cans or bottles in the U.S., you are allowed to place that R in a circle on your labels. Anything short of that, you can't. So that's where the TM comes into play. And TM, you can do lots of you can place a TM in a myriad of different situations. You can have a registered trademark. You're just too lazy to change your label.
Okay.
And so it stays a TM. Google, for example, always puts a TM rather than an R in a circle because they change their logos all the time. They play around with that, right? And they're seen in the whole world. Like, they don't mm-hmm. want to make any claims that might not be 100% true. So they keep a TM, even though they own their trademarks in most of the countries.
Okay.
You can place a TM even if you had a registered trademark, but it expired and you didn't renew it.
Okay.
Right? You can place a TM if your trademark application is still pending. You're waiting for the government to say yes.
Okay.
Right? You file your trademark, you place a TM, and that's what it can mean. And funny enough, TM, you can place a TM next to something that you've never even tried to trademark.
Wow.
So a TM really means nothing. A TM means you want the world to think that you have a trademark. That's really what it means. Whether you actually have a trademark or not, a TM cannot tell you.
Okay.
So when you see a TM next to someone's name of a product or a service, what you want to do is you want to check, hey, have they actually trademarked it? Is it a pending trademark?
Yeah.
Is it a registered trademark? And if the answer to that is yes, then you're like, okay, they just didn't bother to change that TM into an R in a circle. And if it's a no, then the next question you should ask yourself is, do they really have a claim to this name? Can they prove
mm-hmm.
it? And if the answer to that is yes, then you sort of treat it more seriously. If the answer to that is no, then you ignore it. You know, consultants actually loves to do this. Because they realize the value of owning the brand. Some of them just don't want to bother getting a brand.
Right.
And so what they do is they write their copy. They just place TMs everywhere. You know, hey, we have this unique method, rainbows and lollipops trading TM, you know, powered by this amazing, you know, XYZ process TM, you know.
Yeah.
And if you look at their copy, you'll always see a bunch of TMs, and some of it is legit and some of it isn't. So
you gotta
treat TMs with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
But here's the funny thing. I'm like, if you think I'm mocking the industry, I'm not. Because mm-hmm. really, the way you stand out, the way you come up with a USP, the way you get noticed in the marketplace today is not by being a Me Too business. It's not by you being a Me Better business. Because mm-hmm. you say, hey, I do the exact same thing. I just do it a little bit better, a little bit faster, a little bit cheaper, a little bit this or that.
Yeah.
It's, especially with stuff that's intangible. Like how do you actually compare? You don't. You have to buy it first, to only then. So if you don't believe them, it's kind of hard. So the way you win is by being a me-only business. And it's hard to come up with a unique product or a unique service, right? It's hard to come up with something that nobody else does, right? With Trademark Factory, you know, I was lucky to come up with an angle that really wasn't there and still isn't. But if you're essentially doing what everyone else does, there is this shortcut to giving you the ability to be the me only, and you trademark your brand and you say, we are the only accounting firm that uses this IHNC R historical calculator to lower your taxes. And it's suddenly it sounds more legit.
Yeah.
Right. We are the only accounting firm that uses IHNC calculator to lower your taxes, to, you know, whatever, to speed up the filing of your taxes. Instinctively, you're like, tell me more.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is this IHNC calculator? What does it do? Right. And then you tell them, well, IHNC stands for I have no clue. Right. So, I mean, it's obviously a fictitious example, but even that stupid example fulfills the purpose of marketing. It makes you, as a potential lead, want to listen. It opens you up to, like, tell me more, right? So if you don't come up with idiotic names or, you know, like IHNC calculator, but really use this idea, you get something to it. So I'm going to give you a couple of real life examples. So Ford, with their cars, they got an EcoBoost name for their engines, right? And their commercials used to run like hell. Only Ford has EcoBoost fuel economy. And they never bothered to tell you what EcoBoost actually is, how it's different than everyone else, how it's better than anyone else. They just told, we are the only ones who have it.
Yeah.
They don't even bother to tell you if eco stands for economy or ecology. They just tell you, hey, we're the only ones. Subconsciously, you're like, they wouldn't be advertising this so hard if it wasn't good. It's got to be good. Why else would they be telling me about it as the main feature? I got to learn more. And you go to the dealership and you're like, well, you got to trial this car. And of course, it's going to drive like any other car, right? Yeah. And of course, it's going to have an engine that's about the same type of engine as everyone else has. But you're already sold on that idea, hey, I'm going to have an engine that no one else has unless they're driving a Ford. Another example in a less tangible world is SEO services. So everyone does the same checklist of things they do to get you more visible on Google. And there's this one guy who realized that I don't want to be yet another SEO consultant. I want to be known as the one to go to. And so he came up with what's called a skyscraper technique, which, again, there's nothing truly unique about the technique. He actually explains what it is in so many of his blog posts. But that allows you to say, I am the only SEO firm that can help you rank on Google using our proprietary skyscraper technique.
Right.
He knew he can't protect the skyscraper technique, what it actually does. He can't stop other SEO consultants from using the same thing, but he can prevent them from marketing under that
brand.
And that instantly, almost overnight, gave him an expert status. I mean, he's good. He delivers results. But this ability to say, I'm the only one who, is how you play the game. Rob Kiyosaki, you know, started there. And, you know, we can mention it close to the end of this. He's got this cash flow quadrant. Right? The ESBI. He knew that he couldn't own the concept, right? He can't, you can't copyright it. You can't patent it. you can't trade secreted. So he's like, what can I do with it? And so he came up with the visual description, the quadrant, as something that he wanted to own. And so he trademarked the image, the logo, and he doesn't own the concept of, hey, there's different types of revenue, like the employee revenue, the business revenue, the small business, the self-employed business investor, right? So you can't own that stuff. But through owning the logo, he owns the concept. And he sold a few books and a few stage appearances because he owns this. Right.
Amazing.
That's the value of doing this. And so to your point, that R in a circle gives you a lot more weight than that TM.
So good to know. Oh, I appreciate that.
Have you ever thought about launching your own podcast? I've been podcasting since 2015, and I have learned a lot about podcasting in that time. I've made some mistakes, I've learned lots of lessons, and I'm here to help guide you through the process so you don't make the same mistakes that I did. Join me for the next 5-day Launch Your Podcast Challenge. Sign up below with the link in the show notes, and that'll get you on the wait list. So as soon as those dates are officially announced, you will be the first to know.
Well, I have a couple rapid fire questions for you before we finish up. If you'll indulge me, what's your favorite book?
Book. Business book or any book?
Let's say business book.
Built to Sell.
Nice.
Another one that's close up there is The Hard Thing About Hard Things.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Love that one. I'm blanking out on the author. Hang on. Or Ben Horowitz.
Nice. Awesome.
Really great book.
Yeah. Oh, I'm definitely going to check that out. What's your favorite food?
Steak.
Nice. Good. Good choice. Biggest pet peeve?
In a good way or in a bad way?
Whichever way you want.
I am not a big fan of what you... I'm really trying to figure out ways to manifest results as quickly as I can.
Yeah.
Because waiting makes me very anxious. I'm not a very patient person. And it's funny is that it's probably one of the reasons I got into the trademarking business is because to me, it's such a big pain waiting for such a long time that I assume that it's the same for everybody. Because, again, trademarking takes over a year in most countries.
Yeah.
I wanted to find solutions to make entrepreneurs' lives easier as they wait, right? And give them the certainty that inherently isn't there. So I was probably trying to kind of address my pain and through that give something to the market that I think the market needs.
Absolutely. Who inspires you?
Lots of people. To name a few, Sly Stallone, you can probably tell it.
Yeah.
Elon Musk, Dane.
Oh, cool.
Music.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw Sting in concert recently. He was amazing. Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen him live close to a dozen times, and every time it's different.
Wow. Three things you would take with you to a deserted island.
Things.
Mm-hmm.
Is there Wi-Fi on the deserted island?
Sure.
Electricity?
Let's say yes.
Okay. I'll take tablet or a notebook. I'll take, that'll take care of all my informational and entertainment needs.
Right.
I'll take my drum set.
Oh, cool.
I love drumming and I love music. And third one would be lifetime supply of steaks. How's that?
Sounds great. Who's a celebrity you'd like to have dinner with, dead or alive?
So it's so funny you should ask that because, you know, I mentioned I just came back from LA and went there to the thing called a rock and roll camp.
Oh, cool.
And what that is I got to play the drums with some of the musicians I used to look up to as a kid.
Wow.
Right, so there was a bass player from Van Halen, Michael Anthony. There was the drummer from Ozzy and Whitesnake, Tommy Aldridge. There was the guitarist from Rat, Warren DeMartini. And I played the drums with freaking Sebastian Bach on the stage singing, right? And
wow.
That was quite an experience. And, you know, there were a bunch of counselors, also celebrity musicians. And there was Bumblefoot, who was our counselor.
Cool.
He was a guitarist with Guns N' Roses for many years. So I totally see the value of mingling with celebrities, right?
Yeah.
I got to meet with Stallone in December of 22. That was also quite something. So from the ones that I didn't yet meet, dead or alive, Ayn Rand, I think she'd be a very interesting person to talk to.
I bet.
There's a lot of different stuff that was happening in her life, especially close to the end of her life. So
yeah.
I'd be interested to see if some of her thinking changed. I love her books. From the living persons, I'd love to have that dinner with Elon or Kevin O'Leary.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
So those two people in the business sphere really, really interest me, from how they build their personal brands, how they made, you know, good decisions, bad decisions, how they monetize the good decisions, how they save themselves from bad decisions. That would be a very interesting dinner, I think.
I think so. I agree.
So.
And last one, what's your go-to karaoke song?
I don't often do a lot of karaoke, but the stuff that I do when I do is, I'm blanking out again. So it's Billy Joel. I remember how to drum it. I remember how to play it. Hang on. It's from the Bridge album. I can't remember. Hang on.
All right.
I'll find it in 1 second. Pressure.
Oh, cool.
I love that song. It has great arc and great melody.
So, great choice. So I'm going to link your website in the show notes. Is there anywhere else that you want people to connect with you or learn more about you and what you do at Trademark Factory?
So really, there are two routes that you can take if you're an entrepreneur who's interested in protecting your brand. One is short. That's a short path to you getting taken care of by someone who actually gives a damn.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to trademarkfactory.com, you book a call with a strategy advisor, and they'll do a lot of the things that I told you about how to do during this interview. That
yeah.
list of prioritizing and help you figure out, do you start with this or that in this country or that country? That's what you mm-hmm. get on a free call with our strategy advisors, right? Their goal is not to take your money, but more importantly, is to help you get this clarity about, hey, do you even need a trademark?
Yeah.
Do you need a trademark now? Do you need a trademark in your home country only, or maybe somewhere else? And should you focus on this or this or this or this? Right. So use that call as your opportunity to come back with that certainty about, hey, this is what I choose to do. Whether you do it with us or with someone else is secondary, but you are going to come off that call with that certainty. So use that.
Okay.
So that's trademarkfactory.com. If you're not yet certain about a trademark, you want to learn more, I would suggest you go to YouTube and you search for Trademark Factory. I've published for more than 1,000 videos.
Amazing.
If you have a question about trademarks, about intellectual property, I can guarantee you that I probably answered that question more than once.
Nice.
So again, and that's free, costs you nothing. You can do it on your own time with zero pressure. You know,
Perfect.
Get your questions answered. And if you feel that you have done something, you've built something that's worthy of protection, that's worthy of you owning it,
mm-hmm.
go to the website and get it done.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I know I learned a lot from this conversation. I know the audience has as well. So thank you.
Thanks for having me. It was a great conversation. I loved your questions. And I think that together we gave your audience something to think about, which is always a good thing.
Perfect. Did you enjoy this episode? Did you get value out of this episode?
If you did, make sure you send it to one friend who you know would also get value from hearing this. And share it with me. The best place to reach out to me is on Instagram at @TerryHolland. That's Terry with one R, one I. And send me a message. Let me know what your biggest takeaway was from this episode. I would love to connect with you there. And of course, you know, leave that 5-star review because those are always very helpful. Thanks so much for joining me today. I'll be back on Thursday for another episode of Success in Mind. Bye for now, friends.